Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 25th of October already. All things political coming up this hour with Ken Rudin, a great guest to have a week and a day before the midterm elections. Just one announcement. Thanks to everybody who came to the Milwaukee Art Museum last Thursday. We just had a lovely morning. It was great to speak with Nancy Pearl and Lori Winters and all of you who were in our audience. They just left feeling enriched. It was a good day. Somebody suggested that we have a sunrise gathering at the Art Museum at some point. And I answered, I can't talk at that time of day, but I'd sure be willing to show up and have some coffee and watch the sunrise. So maybe that will be on our agenda down the road. Ken Rudin is our guest this hour. Ken is the political editor for National Public Radio. He directs campaign coverage for the network, and he has been covering every congressional race in this country since 1984. He covers presidential contests and the primaries, national conventions, debates, the general election. He writes the Political Junkie blog on NPR.org, and he's on every Wednesday on NPR's Talk of the Nation. He's worked for ABC News, where he served as deputy political director and later as the off-air reporter on Capitol Hill covering the House. And he has also been managing editor of The Hotline, a daily political newsletter. We ask that you be gentle on Ken for at least the first few minutes. His dear Yankees will not be in the World Series. And I'm so sorry, Ken.
Well, you know, first of all, I know you're mocking me, but do you realize the Yankees have not won the World Series since 2009? You know what I'm going through?
Oh, Ken, I know you love them, but those of us in the Midwest.
We got completely outplayed by Texas, and Texas deserved to win. And I really mean that. I'm not just making that up.
Okay. All right, that's good. Well, you know, we in our household, my husband's a baseball columnist, so we have this big, beautiful picture in our living room, and you will get this, that says Bushville wins. So that was when we won way back in the 1950s.
Well, speaking of Bushville, I mean, I saw a little sign today that said, that isn't it interesting that once George W. Bush left the Texas Rangers, now they go to the World Series.
But, Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, you're a busy guy. You're just perfect person to have on a week before the midterms, and thank you so much. But I want to start with this interesting, maybe a little walk down history. You had this meeting with two Republicans, two Democrats, former members of the House who loved the institution, and they were all civil to each other.
Well, yes. That's sort of like something that hasn't happened in a long, long time. And I think that was the reason why the National Archives decided to do this. Last week, I moderated a panel with four former members of Congress, two Democrats, two Republicans, and basically they talked about what life was like when they were in Congress. And for the most part, I mean, look, we've had ugliness in Congress. We've had personal attacks going on for decades, if not centuries. But it just seems like this one seems particularly tough and bad, and I'm not sure if Congress works anymore. And it's not because, you know, the Tea Party or the Republicans or the Democrats. It's just that everybody's out. Everybody's still fighting the last battle. I still hear talks about John Tower and Robert Bork.
Oh my
gosh,
Clarence
Thomas, and they people don't forget things. And well, it was pretty bad 2 years ago. We're going to make it bad next year. So who knows what's going to happen on November 2nd or next year? But it doesn't look promising for, shall we say, comedy. Comedy, maybe, but not comedy.
Yeah, well, Clarence Thomas is back in the news, too, after all these years. There's a story.
Well, that's right. Ginny Thomas giving phony phone calls. No, of course not phony phone calls. That's what we used to do when we were kids. But the strange message she left on Anita Hill's answering machine saying, you know, why won't you apologize? You should apologize for what you did to my husband. And then, of course, that was followed by a couple of days when another former girlfriend of Clarence Thomas before he was married came forward and just, you know, started talking about his past. So we thought that we left this back in 1989, but some things just don't disappear.
Yeah, and is it going to go on? Will there be more to this story? Obviously, he's on the Supreme Court. He's there forever, but you kind of want the controversy to be over.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I'm not really paying that much attention to it. I know it does get the headlines and gets, you know, people starting, you know, clucking and tittering and things like that. But it's just, again, as I said about the arguments that's going on in the House about the last battle, we still, you know, I said 1989, but of course that was, 1991 with the Clarence Thomas hearings, and of course that led in many people's minds to the so-called Year of the Woman in 1992. And, you know, there's still people who are just still recovering from it. Doug, when Arlen Specter was defeated, the senator from Pennsylvania, when he was defeated in the primary in May this year in Pennsylvania in the Democratic primary, he'd switched parties. But a lot of people said, they still never liked him from the Clarence Thomas hearing. So people just have long memories.
It is interesting how somebody made this point last week that when we watch the O.J. Simpson hearings, when we watch the Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill hearings, it really showed how divided we are. It was interesting how people came down on the truth in completely different ways and really adhere to what they think the truth was to this day.
Right. I mean, O.J. Simpson was clearly about race, and the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas hearings were clearly about gender, but you're absolutely right. I mean, how it's just fascinating that it's basically the same thing, but how two different sides will see it so completely differently.
Yeah. In the NPR News report at the top of the hour, Michael Still was saying that there will be a big wave, referring, of course, to a big Republican wave next Tuesday. What's your take?
Well, Michael Steele says the Republicans take the House and Senate. Tim Kaine, the Democratic National Chairman, says that the Democrats keep the House and Senate. I suspect that they're both half right. The way it looks right now, I think the Democrats do keep the Senate. The Republicans need 10 seats to pick it up. I see the most the Republicans getting are maybe 7. But right now, it's very, very close. Some people think that the Republicans are going to pick up 50 seats in the House or more. I don't think of it that large of a spread. I think that Republicans could pick up perhaps 45 seats, but they're going to lose not a bunch, but maybe 4 or 5 in Illinois and Hawaii and Louisiana, places like that. So ultimately, as of this second, I do think the Republicans will take the House, but it'll be very, very close. It's just remarkable, but if you go 4 years ago, the thought of John Boehner replacing Nancy Pelosi after 4 years of Democratic control in the House, it's pretty remarkable, because 4 years ago, and even 2 years ago, Nancy Pelosi was on the ascendancy, and John Boehner was saddled with two successive bad showings by the Republicans.
Yeah. And no matter what you think of her, Nancy Pelosi has, I think, been a very effective Speaker of the House. She certainly has been able to forward legislation that maybe better than the president did.
Well, that's one point of view. I mean, we're talking about how people see things differently. There are other people who say that Nancy Pelosi is one of the most disliked politicians in the country, which is so remarkable. If you look at the polls, her numbers are really, really terrible. Her negatives are very, very high. And there are at least 40 members of Congress, Democratic members of Congress, who either will not mention the Pelosi name or have gone so far to say that they will not support her for another term as Speaker. So, again, a tremendous turnaround.
Why is that? Why does she have such negative ratings? Why are they so high?
Well, it's part of the Obama thing, too. Like, perhaps maybe too much has happened too fast. There are a lot of the Democrats who were first elected in 2006 and 2008 were elected in pretty conservative districts, or districts that went for John McCain in 2008. And Pelosi has really not gone out of her way, many people say, to try to save these kind of moderate conservatives, blue dog Democrats. Instead, she's pushed her agenda, and she's put a lot of conservative/blue dog Democrats at risk.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have pretty different philosophies.
I'm sorry?
They have fairly different philosophies.
They do. And, of course, you know, Nancy Pelosi wouldn't be Speaker had not these blue dogs be elected in 2006 and 2008. Even, you know, Rahm Emanuel and all these Democrats felt like ideology was not the important thing. It was just numbers. Mm-hmm. If we have more Democrats than there are Republicans, we can get our agenda through. So you'll see a lot of people who are pro-gun and anti-abortion and anti same-sex marriage and all that stuff. But again, if they have a D after their name, for many Democrats in the leadership, that was just fine.
Interesting article in the Times yesterday, Peter Baker's article, saying that although he will not say so, there is at least a plausible argument that he, meaning President Obama, might be better off if the Democrats lose, at least in the House. The reality of presidential politics is that it helps to have an enemy.
Well, that is exactly what saved Bill Clinton in 1996. The feeling about President Clinton in 1993 was that he was not on strong ground. He was floundering. He was just not doing a great job. There were a lot of defeats on guns and taxes and the budget and things like that. But when the Republicans and Newt Gingrich and company won control of the House and Senate in 1994, Clinton then had an issue to run against, an enemy to focus on. And then 2 years later, you know, Clinton won easy re-election over Bob Dole. So I kind of think that the best thing that could happen, I mean, this sounds cynical and perhaps Machiavellian, but it's true. Perhaps the best thing that could happen to President Obama, at least the best thing that could happen to his re-election chances, is for the Republicans to win at least one of the, you know, either the House or Senate in 2010.
And do you think if that happens that there will be whatever form it takes, and I wonder what form it will take, there will have to be some agreement on issues because the American public won't put up with a do-nothing administration, a do-nothing Congress?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't know. The question is really, what will the American public put up with? I mean, clearly, some things were done in this Congress. I mean, some major things. I mean, the bailouts of the auto industries and the bank industry and the health care overhaul. And that, those are major pieces of legislation. But at the same time, nothing has gotten done in the last couple of months. Everything has been political related. And the fact is that the American public seems to be on the at least right now on the Republican side, saying that it's the Democrats' fault, it's the Obama's fault. But again, if both sides are equally blamed in 2011, then for all we know, either we wind up with just terrible gridlock, or we do see some kind of a combination. But right now, many of the folks who are running for office this year, especially the Republicans, do not look like the word accommodation is in their vocabulary. And I'm not saying that to be critical or snide, but clearly the issues are in their favor, you know, for November 2nd.
Yeah. So let's explore this anger that Americans have, not all Americans, but a lot of Americans have toward this administration. What is it? Is it because they don't have jobs or they're not getting raises? They're having a hard time economically. Do they have real philosophical differences with health care reform? They're mad at the banks. Where is the anger?
Well, I think it's a lot of it is all of the above. Of course, a lot of the things you just mentioned is perhaps what prompted the rise and the role of the Tea Party. But also, you know, we could talk about President Obama is, you know, out of touch, or he's elitist, or he's, you know, he's not talking to the people. I think that's a bunch of malarkey. I think what it really is that there's a 9.6 unemployment rate, mm-hmm. which is higher than it was when he took office. And we could talk about who's at fault. And there are strong arguments that it's the Bush and even the Clinton administration before that, that, you know, because of deregulation, because of, you know, curing favor with Wall Street. There's a lot of reasons. In other words, the economy just didn't go sour 19 months ago. But the point is, voters see that the Democrats are in charge. The Democrats are on the ballot. They control the House, the Senate, and the White House. And I'm uncertain about my job. I just lost my job. I'm nervous about my kids' financial future.
Right.
And if that's the case, then somebody has to pay the price. And right now it looks like it's the Democrats.
Right. Were there, I was watching Ed Rendell the other day, who said that there were quite a few stimulus jobs that came to Philadelphia as a result of the stimulus bill. Were there jobs created all around the country and the administration is just being silent about this for God knows what reason, or were there not?
I mean, there were jobs. I mean, perhaps not as big, as large number as they hoped. And that's why Vice President Biden and others have talked about a second stimulus package. But no, there have been. We saw in Florida a bunch of teachers have been hired, things like that. I just don't think that the numbers are anywhere near the rosy expectation that the administration once had for this whole thing.
Could he, should he have proposed a much larger job creation program?
Well, you know, at the time, everybody felt that everything was just too enormous. I mean, healthcare was enormous. The stimulus package was enormous. The bailouts were enormous. There are a lot of Democrats who said you got to go slow. You can't do this all at once because there are so many problems, and I think you'll scare half the American people. Now, perhaps they should have, you know, realized that the stimulus as proposed was not as going to be as successful as they had hoped. But again, for a larger number, even the number that it was just, you know, inconceivable to many people. The thought of going doing something so gigantic as this scared a lot of Democrats, feeling that it was just too much and too fast and too soon.
Yeah. Ken Rudin is our guest. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. A week and a day before the midterms, and that's what we're talking about, this All Things Political. He wrote an interesting piece on the gubernatorial races as well, where he expects the Republicans will do very well. And we'll talk about that as this hour moseys along. John in Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, John.
Hi. I've got a question for Ken that I wasn't sure of. I got an email from a friend of mine, and in the email he references Wikipedia, and if anybody wanted to see it, they could just look for national debt and GDP, and it will come up, and it has a graph. And on the graph, it shows the national debt as a percentage of GDP for all the presidents, all the administrations. And what surprised me that I found hard to believe was that every Democratic president since World War II, the national debt as a percentage of GDP has gone down. And every Republican president since Richard Nixon, the national debt as a percentage of GDP has gone up. And I just couldn't believe that. And I was wondering, is that true? And if it's true, why don't you hear Democrats promoting this?
Well, first of all, you should never, John, thanks for your call, but first of all, you should never quote Wikipedia in anything you ever say, although they may very well be right in this, because Wikipedia can be wrong so many times, and it is wrong. But having said that, just look at the last two administrations. Bill Clinton, you know, they had the balanced budget, they had the, of course, they didn't have 9/11 and the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, but still, the debt was much smaller under President Clinton, and after President Bush took over in office, and of course after 9/11, the debt was just enormous. So, and there's a lot of cases like that where Democrats, despite the accepted views that the Democrats are the big spenders and the Republicans are the fiscal conservatives, in reality, that's not always been the case with presidential administrations. I don't know if that's true in the last X amount of years, but that is a fascinating study. But just take a look at the last two administrations. This is exactly what happened.
Thanks, John. Cindy in Whitefish Bay. Hi.
Hi. Well, I don't know why this is, but I seem to have a completely different perspective than anybody else. Anybody I've heard on the radio, it's just amazing to me how, to me, it seems like politics is handled as a team sport, and there are two teams, and you either cheer for one team or you cheer for the other, and for the life of me, I can't figure out that loyalty, but, you know, I keep hearing results of polls and the notion that people are turning against this administration, and could it be that there is a sentiment out there that you know, really it ought not be a team sport, that it's the government, and what people are upset with is, you know, not the Democrats or the Republicans, but the whole ball of wax, and the fact that, you know, during the Bush administration, it seemed like nothing got done, at least unless you were wealthy. Maybe then you viewed that some things were, you know, changing for the positive. And then during the Clinton administration, there was all this scandal, and it just seemed like the White House was a playground. And now people really want to see some things happen, and at the same time, it seems like, you know, through maybe no fault of anybody, but you know, the economy and jobs and homelessness and all of that, that people at this point really want some change. And so the degree to which we're expressing dissatisfaction with the government in general is greater now.
Are you a Tea Party supporter, Cindy?
You know, I was when it first came out, until they started to peg membership in the Tea Party as you know, like the wolf in sheep's clothing.
Okay, let's get a response. We have a lot of callers.
A lot of good points. I mean, first of all, for the longest time, we always heard the left saying there was no difference between the parties. It was really the government. It was a one-party government, a corporate government.
Right.
So, you know, they lumped Democrats and Republicans in that. Tea Party kind of folks kind of do that, too. They, of course, you know, they think Obama's a socialist, and they think this, but they also despise the Republican establishment. We saw that in states like Delaware, Alaska, other places where Tea Party candidates ousted establishment Republicans. But, you know, you're absolutely right. There is it's us against them and them against us. And we saw that. I remember Democrats in 2006, a whole bunch of them standing outside of a gas station somewhere where the gas prices were at $5 a gallon. And it almost looked like they were rooting for the price of gas to go up so they could make their case that Democrats should be in power. And then I see the same thing with Republicans this year looking at Obama, and there's some Republicans who have said not exactly these words, but it's almost like they're rooting for Obama to fail so they can come back. It's always been D's and R's, and it's not really the public, you know, what's good for the public. And that is tragic. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens if there are huge Republican gains on a week from Tuesday, and if there's a big, you know, Republican say in the government. If nothing gets done, if it's just more of the same, then there could be a revolt out there, like people say, enough is enough is enough. Or it's very possible that maybe these lawmakers will hear what the people are saying and they'll try to accommodate some of that. But right now, I'm not too hopeful.
Ken Rudin, NPR political editor, our guest for All Things Political this hour. Our phone number, Cindy, thanks for your call, is 800-486-8655. Oh, we have an email, too. That's talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program this Monday, the author of the cover story in Foreign Policy magazine, Old World, The Graying of the Planet and How It Will Change Everything. Jim from Galena is next. Ken Rudin. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I'm a retired directing business agent with a machinist union, and I did not vote for Bill Clinton the second term, and I'll tell you why. Part of the reason was we were servicing 38 different corporations, and when they passed the North American Free Trade Agreement that most of these corporations moved to the cheaper labor market in Mexico, which is, I'd say, causing part of your problems today. The corporations have no religion left in them. Their only thing is their bottom line's profit. They don't care about the cities. They don't care about the states. And they don't care about the people. And if we don't correct that, it's just going to continue to get worse. I guess I don't understand why the American people, I say 35-40% of them or so, damn naive. The Republican Party, I have voted for both parties, I want to say that, both candidates, different candidates in both parties. I'm not just one type of a voter, but I don't understand why the American people want to blame Obama for the stagnation. The Republican Party has blocked everything because of the rules in the Senate ever since he got elected. And if this Republican Party gets elected, you're going to lose part of your Medicare program, you're going to lose part of your Social Security program, you're going to have more free trade agreements, more of your jobs are going to be shipped overseas. I just don't understand why they're so confused this time.
Okay, let's get a response. Ken?
Well, there are a lot of charges out there, and I think Jim is partially right on a lot of things, but of course, remember, it was the Democrats who put NAFTA through. It was Bill Clinton who put NAFTA through. So to say to blame the Republicans that we're going to lose jobs because of free trade, but, you know, I think NAFTA itself is a Democratic, is a relic of a Democratic administration. But to say that, you know, if the Republicans come in, you're going to lose Medicare stuff, you're going to lose Social Security, the Democrats have been saying that since 1982, that the Republican Party is the party of, you know, that they don't care and they're cold and heartless. And ultimately, look, I think there are a lot of problems with Social Security program. I think that it is going to go bankrupt by whatever year it is. And to ignore it, you know, I saw that in the debate between Ron Johnson and Russ Feingold, that, you know, it's one thing to say that I believe in Social Security and I want it to work, but you have to be realistic about a lot of things. So there are a lot of charges out there, and of course, It's fascinating to me, as probably is fascinating to Jim, how the Republicans were so repudiated in 2006 and 2008, and 2 years later they're on verge of coming back to this historic or this huge comeback. And I'm not exactly sure what happened that, you know, that Obama was so awful that to make it happen, but this is a very fickle American electorate, and, you know, as angry as they were in 2006 and 2008 about what the Republicans were doing, they seem to have turned around in 2008. And if it's somebody who sells himself as such a good communicator as Barack Obama does and did in 2008, I'm very surprised that he is not, his argument has not held the day. But that, I guess that's the problem with the new president and the reaction after the first 2 years.
Certainly, this shipping jobs to China has been the focus of a lot of congressional and Senate campaign ads this year.
From both sides, though, from both mm-hmm. Democrats and Republicans.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. What does that say?
Well, it's an easy target, and it's not as simple. I mean, there's an Ohio Senate race there where Lee Fisher, the Democrat, is blaming Rob Portman, who's the Republican former trade guy under the Bush, former budget czar under Bush, and he's saying that it's his fault that all the jobs are leaving Ohio and going to other countries. And Rob Portman is saying, well, no, they're leaving Ohio because of bad economic management that's going to other states. So, you know, there are charges and there are facts, and you just have to look at exactly what NAFTA has meant for the economy and for job loss.
Thank you, Jim. Ann in Madison, hello.
Hi. Well, with regard to Social Security, if corporate America in exchange for so-called campaign contributions is allowed to ship millions of jobs to the cheapest labor countries overseas, there won't be any tax base for Social Security, or, you know, people who are thrown out of work don't pay the Social Security tax. So I think that's not correct. And I think that political analysts are disanalyzing and misanalyzing the reason these polls, which are paid for usually by private interest groups without, you know, saying what questions are asked and so forth. The Democrats are in trouble not because they're too progressive, but because they're acting too much. They acted over the last, 4 years, too much like Republicans. And the only people who usually vote Democratic, with the exception of the last election, are Democrats. And the people who vote Republican are Republicans. And if Nancy Pelosi hadn't said when she took over, impeachment is off the table, if NAFTA had been genuinely changed or repealed, if torture had been investigated and the criminals in the Bush administration had been pursued, if the U.S. attorneys Bush appointed had been replaced by Obama, you know, none of the apathy of the Democrats would be in effect right now.
And what do you think is going to
happen? Democrats are corporate.
What's your thought about what's going to happen a week from tomorrow, Ann?
Well, I don't know, but, you know, we have a secret ballot in this country and in most countries for a reason. We shouldn't be forced to reveal how we're going to vote, and I, for one, and a lot of other people do not. I don't care what these polls say, and I think I have no idea. I don't have a crystal ball, Kathleen. So,
all right.
You know, who knows? None of us
who knows?
Except people who are fixing voting machines.
All right. Thanks, Ann, for your call. Ken.
I love Ann's question. So many good points. First of all, Ann, you should not care about what polls say. You should vote, and you should get your friends to vote. As far as the reliability of polls, look, on the day of the New Hampshire primary in 2008, we were convinced that Barack Obama was going to beat Hillary Clinton, and he didn't. And if we couldn't predict the day of a primary, then, you know, the thought of what's going to happen a week from now, or we've been saying for the last month, who knows what's going to happen. But the point is, the polls that we're citing are reputable. We're not doing the secret polls or the party polls or the Chamber of Commerce or the SEIU polls. We're looking at Pew. We're looking at Gallup. We're looking at polls that do have a good track record. The point Ann makes about whether the Obama administration should have been more faithful to the progressive left, that's what I hear from the progressives all the time. I said the reason we're unhappy in 2010 is not because they've been so liberal and so, you know, left wing, but they've been just so pro-accommodating. They've been trying to, you know, satisfy Republicans and hurting their own base at the same time. So yes, you could say we should have gone after the Bush war crimes, and we should have gone after this, and we should have gone after that. But at the same time, you do have a huge contingent of the Democratic Party in the House, from the South, from conservative areas, from McCain districts, that never would have allowed Nancy Pelosi to pursue the impeachment and this crime and that and this, and that's why it couldn't happen. We always talk about the war in the Republican Party between the establishment and the Tea Party. There has been a war for 4 years, if not 2 years, in the Democratic Party as well. The true believers, the progressive left, the people that basically elected, that wanted Bush out in 2008, if not earlier, and those, you know, moderate conservatives who just can't bring themselves to vote Republican, but they are very conservative. And that's the Democrats, and that's what's hanging over the Democrats as much as what's hanging over the Republicans. It's an internal conflict that has just not been resolved.
Yeah. And I wonder, this brings up the question of where actually the president stands on certain issues, too, because a lot of people have been trying to figure out where he does stand for the last 2 years. If he is a progressive and had really stood up and said, you know, this is what I think about health care reform, if he had exhibited strong leadership and strong opinions on some of these issues, would that have served him well? I don't even know if he feels that way about the issues.
Yeah, I don't know what would have served him well. And you also had people like Rahm Emanuel who basically felt like, I think that health care is too big.
Yeah.
We're asking for too much. We're being too, you know, it's just too much big government. We just need to win elections. And they felt that you know, perhaps principle went out the window in exchange for, you know, victories at the polling booth.
Yeah. Thanks, Ann, for your call.
Ann,
always.
That's a good question.
Yes, Ann has good questions. Bridget from Barrington, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. How are you? I have a little different point of view, and I'm so excited to talk to Ken. And how come I've never won the scuttle button question?
first of all, I'm buyable. If you pay me off, you can win. That's how it works. It's like everything.
All right, I'll keep that in mind. But my nephew is a congressional staffer, so I have heard a lot of inside dope from him. But one of his things is that people who have the throw the bums out attitude don't realize that, you know, a complete newbie who comes into Congress has to hire people who knows what's going on. And these same civil servants behind the scenes are really the ones who are running things. And that's why nothing ever really much changes.
Well, Bridget just made the argument against term limits, because basically if you have term limits and you have 3 terms and you're out, whereas the staffers will stay forever, the lobbyists will stay forever, and they'll be running Washington even more so than, you know, than they have been in the past. So as a perfect example of what's wrong with the argument against term limits. But ultimately, you know, it's a very powerful – it'll look – every time you have a wave election, as we had in 2006 and perhaps a little bit less in 2008, and then another one coming in now, you know, it's going to take them 2 years, 4 years to even understand how it works. And the first thing they do when they get elected is to raise money so they can get elected once again. So of all the things that don't work in Washington, it is when you have a wave election, you have all these new people who are just angry. And, you know, anger is fun for a while, but ultimately constructive, you know, accomplishments need to matter as well. So you can be angry and it's fine, but you know, if you're just being elected on anger's sake alone, and then you have to govern, then, you know, heaven help the country.
Right. Bridget, thanks. Jack in Milwaukee. Hi.
Give Bridget my address and tell her, you know, stuff cash in the envelope and she'll win scuttlebutton.
You mean another campaign button wouldn't do?
That'll do it, yeah.
That'll do it, too?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Jack, hi.
Hi, good morning. A wonderful show. Thank you. I have just a couple of comments. One, what frightens me the most is the fact that we have people, a lot of whose concerns are very legitimate. The economy went in the tank. People are losing homes, jobs, all that. But we have people who, too often, who are seem to be incapable of critical thinking. And there was the ancient use or the meaning of the word idiot in ancient Greece was someone who was not concerned with anything beyond his garden gate. He wasn't concerned with the body politic. And I think we have too many social and political idiots in this country. It's all about me, 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 and there's no us involved in it. And that frightens me. We've got to be concerned with the common good as well as our own families and our own selves. And I'd like you to comment on that.
Well, I agree with you, yes, and I think that kind of mirrors an earlier call too, since that people are just cared more about R's and D's and not about the common good. But I do understand the concern about the garden gate, and I'm nervous. Look, you know, if my next door neighbor is doing fine and I'm in trouble, then really, I mean, what I care about is my financial well-being and my family's financial well-being. But at the same time, there's so much incorrect, and we're talking about the word idiot again, with so much incorrect information out there. You get it on cable TV, you get it on the blogs, you get it on the internet, and there is no filter. There's nobody saying that, and I think that's part of the problem is that so many newspapers are disappearing. But there's so much bad information out there, wrong information out there, and because it's repeated over and over and over again, people think it's true. So I understand the concern about the garden gate. What concerns me even more is the fact that people will hear things, read things, and say, this must be true because I read it, and therefore they think that's exactly the way things are going, and it's not. And I think that's even a bigger tragedy.
Well, I always like to ask people, where do you, and particularly people like you, where is the good information?
Well, you mean besides NPR and my blog? No, I mean, I understand.
Yeah,
look,
of course.
I understand that people will say that, NPR is left-wing and why should I trust them, and Fox is right-wing and why should I trust them, and of course I don't like to equate NPR with Fox, and I
please
just did that.
Don't.
I didn't mean to do
right.
No, actually, that was not my point. My point is that I really think that there are, there are good, great newspapers out there that really care about trying to explain what's going on. There's a PolitiFact thing that's out of St. Petersburg, Florida, that talks about, ad campaigns and campaign TV ads and whether they're true or not.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, people like to sit in front of Fox or they like to sit in front of MSNBC and decide, well, they must be telling the truth because they're on television, or they'll look at a blog or they'll look at the internet and say, well, this guy must be cheating. This guy must be a crook because I read it in these rumors. So that's what scares me the most.
Yeah. Thank you, Jack, very much for your call. We go next to George from Milwaukee.
Hi.
Hi.
Comment and a question. Comment is, seems to me that a lot of the Tea Party people who are most agitated by what's been going on in the country are people that basically have been voting Republican for a long time. I don't think, from what I've seen in the news media, that there's a lot of people who are genuine independents who have been attending these things. I think it is fueled by people who, who have been Republicans for a long time, and they're upset that Obama won, and they want to try to turn it around, and they have from day one. And my question is, and does Mr. Rudin think that the economy would have been better off today if John McCain would have been elected?
Well, wow, that last question is great, and I think it was clear from the 2008 debates that whatever you think of John McCain, and there were pluses and there were minuses, I suspect that McCain didn't have any understanding or very little understanding of what was going on in the economy. I don't think a lot of people in the country did, but if you look at the debates at least, there seemed to be more understanding from President Obama, from Barack Obama, the candidate, than there was from John McCain, the candidate. As far as the Republican Party, and the Tea Party is nothing but Republican people who have been voting Republican for so many years, there's truth to that. I mean, do I think they're Republican? Yes, I do. I still think these are a lot of people who have just been angry. They were not only angry at the Democrats, they were angry at Republicans. They were angry at Bush. They were angry at the ridiculous deficits that the so-called conservative Congress, the Republican Congress, was putting up over and over again. I mean, the war on terror was part of it, but a lot of it was just, the kind of the projects that the Republicans railed at for years, and they were just as guilty as everybody else. So I think a lot of them may be Republicans. They may be kind of Perot people, too. And I suspect that a lot of the Perot people were Republicans who were just disgusted with the way things were going. But if you listen to the Tea Party people now, much of their contempt is just as directed as the Republicans, against the Republicans, as it is against the Democrats. And so, yes, I do think they're going to vote Republican on November 2nd, and I think they're going to come out in strong numbers. But, if the Republicans poll in 2011 what they polled after, during their decade in power, especially with the big deficits, either the Tea Party goes away or they sit home or they say, well, maybe it's the Democrats who have a better idea. But I don't think it's just Republicans coming home to their party. I think it's more than that.
For those who are following this midterm election, I would bet, and I wonder if anybody's done a poll on this, that most of us know more about the Alaska race, the Delaware race, and the Nevada race with Tea Party candidates than we do about many other races in the country. The amount of media attention, Ken, has been so astronomically high. Why is that? And is that responsible of the media to concentrate so much on just those races?
Well, I understand the focus on Nevada, for example, because you have a Tea Party candidate, Sharron Angle, who has had many controversial and controversial positions, and yet she's running dead even with the majority leader of the United States Senate. That is remarkable to me. The fact that we're focusing and spending so much time on Christine O'Donnell in Delaware, I think, is part of the laziness of the media, and the fact is, one, it's not a close race. She's going to get clobbered. Two, we love crazy candidates who say these outrageous things. I mean, I think I just heard that, she was asked to talk about a Supreme Court decision she disagreed with, and she said Alley versus Frazier. No, I made that up. No, that's not true. But I'm just saying it's the kind of thing where we just love to focus on because it's just so nutty, which is a tragedy because there are so many important races out there.
Exactly.
Candidates we never, ever heard of, and will determine who's going to control the next half of the Senate.
Yeah, exactly. Dave in West Bend, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just to change the subject a bit, I call in regard to, say, voter apathy, with the idea of people looking at the tremendous amount of monies that are being spent by candidates on either side of the fence, and each candidate is calling the other one an idiot, and people are sitting there, well, if that's the case, well, I'm not going to vote.
Well, except the fact is that, I mean, I've never seen an election like that where everybody sits home, although you're absolutely right. I mean, the dialogue on both sides is certainly not Lincoln Douglas, shall we say. It's more like Buster Douglas. but I kind of think you're right, although just like in 2006, when everything was going the Democrats' way, I think a lot of Republicans said, well, I'm tired of defending this guy, meaning Bush or the Republicans. I'm tired of defending them. And, Ann who called before and talked about how, the progressives, it's the progressives who should come out because, if anything, Obama was too conservative. I think there are a lot of Democrats who are progressives who feel that either Obama was too accommodating or too cautious. And they're not happy. I don't think both sides ever sit out. I think in these kind of elections, one side is more discouraged than the other. And that's what, determines who wins in November.
Ken Rudin, our guest for All Things Political on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program, Old World, the Graying of the Planet and How It Will Change Everything. Ken Rudin is with us this hour. Sarah in Zion, Illinois is next. Hi, Sarah.
Okay, hi.
Hi.
First of all, can I just follow up a little bit on something I think Anne was saying, and it just bugs me to see so much focus placed on people's predictions about what might happen, because I don't quite understand why that's the news instead of waiting and see what really does happen. And I feel like it's like treating it like a sporting event, and then it could bias people's, how they are going to vote. So anyway, but besides that, I read that what they are predicting is a 50% voter turnout compared to 60% during the Obama election, and that's going to work against the Democrats. And I'm wondering how much of that might be black voters who aren't, well, maybe they're disenchanted, and also there's not the big excitement of the Obama candidacy. And I wonder what you think about that.
Well, two things. First of all, I agree with you, Sarah, completely that polls have become the story, and that they do discourage or encourage turnout, depending on who's up and who's down. But that shouldn't be the story. A poll should be a reflection of what's going on out there, but it shouldn't be the headlines. Unfortunately, when you're 8 days out from an election, the horse race becomes the big story. But again, I don't know, people should just vote. And obviously, if we're worried about turnout, if everybody votes, then you don't have to, then the story is just malarkey to begin with. But here's the thing. There's always much more a bigger turnout in a presidential race than there is in the midterm election, always. So this big coalition of folks who showed up in 2008 for Obama, African-Americans, Latinos, union leaders, young people, there's a sense that these people will not come out, one, because they're discouraged about what's going on with the economy, and two, they just, it's just, the turnout is always smaller and smaller, and it's always smaller in a midterm election than an off presidential year. And again, the people who do come out are the people who are most riled up. And if Democrats are discouraged and Republicans are angry but encouraged to vote, then you're going to see a bigger Republican turnout.
It was, when you think about that last election, the fact that an African-American became president of this country was historically just a huge event, Ken, wasn't it? It was huge.
It was, and of course, Obama will tell you that he played it down, and he did play it down. You know, he didn't run as a black candidate, as a lot of people accuse, like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton running. He really, you know, if it weren't for the color of his skin or the way he looked, I mean, you know, who knows what decides people's votes. But, I mean, he still talked about what people cared about the uncertainty about the economy, about the unpopularity of the wars, and where are we going with food prices and gas prices and uninsured people. And so you know, you think of all the, if you look at the numbers, Obama got a bigger Democratic turnout than any Democrat since Lyndon Johnson, far more than, bigger percentage than Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton or that other Democratic president, Al Gore. You know, he got much more votes, much more of a percentage, because not because he was black, white, green, or orange. It's just that he spoke the language. But I think there was an earlier caller who wondered whether race has something to do with the reaction to Obama. I'm not saying it's all of it. Do I think it's part of it? I do, absolutely. I think that's just inevitable, even though there was a lot of ugliness directed at Bill Clinton as well, and George W. Bush as well. But is there a race connotation part of it? I think yes, but I think it's also just the uncertainty and the uncertainty about the economy and people's future that people are getting very scared. And I think when people are scared and uncertain, terrible things are said and terrible things are intimated.
Here's an email that's come in. What do you think of Jon Stewart's rally to restore sanity? Do you think it's just entertainment or is it political? What do you think will be the turnout and the impact?
Well, yeah, you know, I'm not a big fan of. I mean, I understand what Stewart and Colbert do, and I understand the attractiveness of it. At the same time, I try not to talk about them in serious terms because, you know, I watched Colbert speak before Congress a few weeks ago at a hearing, and there are a lot of people who love whatever he does, and they think whatever he does is just so clever. And I think there are serious things out here, and I don't think, you know, a rally, it's the kind of thing that makes a difference, but if it makes people feel good, that's good too. But I don't have a good answer to that question, only because I try not to focus much on Stewart and Colbert, even though I know that many people, for the most part, get their news from people like that, and I understand that.
Okay. Thanks, Sarah. Ivanka is next from Greendale. Hi.
Hi, it's Ivanka. Good morning.
Ivanka. Hi, Ivanka.
I am not only disappointed that Juana Williams was fired, but I am very disappointed the way he was fired. And for NPR, that is known for standing for civil rights, that is, it was really, really unethical. And my second concern deals with the fact that NPR is taking money from the rich and famous and people with murky past like George Soros, that is, who meddles into the affairs, not of just in America, but also people in other parts of the world. And so I'll take the comments off you.
All right. Thanks, Ivanka.
Well, you know something, I like this question a lot. And of course, we could spend the whole hour on it, and I wish we had more time to talk about it. But let me say a lot of things. First of all, this has nothing to do with civil rights. It has nothing to do with the fact that Juan is African-American. I love Juan Williams. I've known him for years. I was a friend. I've edited his stuff. I've worked with him for the longest time. And I don't want to trash anybody when he's down, but there's a lot of misinformation out there. As Vivian Schiller, the CEO of NPR, said in an all-staff meeting and to other people as well, he has said things in the past that don't represent what NPR should be, in my viewpoint. I mean, I think, was it handled badly? Absolutely. Should he have been fired over a cell phone? Absolutely not. Was it done all... poorly in every way possible, yes. But, like, you know, he once said that Michelle Obama was Stokely Carmichael in a dress. I mean, these are cute things, and I understand you're supposed to be controversial and provocative on Fox News, but that's not what NPR is all about. It's not about limiting somebody's free speech. I just don't think that our role is to pay somebody to say whatever he wants in the name of free speech. Juan can say whatever he wants, and he will on Fox. And, again, I miss Juan, and I like him very much. But I understand. I think the decision was a right decision. And it's far more than just about Muslims on an airplane. There's a history of things that haven't gotten out, and I don't want to start giving hints or anything, but there were other things as well. Having said that, I agree with you about George Soros. A matter of fact, at an all-staff meeting, and I hope I'm not talking about, you know, private stuff here, but at an all-staff meeting, I raised that point. I said, look, it's one thing. Look, George Soros, his foundation, gave over $1 million to NPR. George Soros has absolutely no editorial input at all. I guarantee it, absolutely none. But I said at this meeting, but there's a perception out there. If NPR is trying to battle the impression that we're a left-wing, you know, so of course some people will think that's a joke, that they were right-wing, but anyway, if we're trying to battle it, the last thing you want to do is get money from George Soros and say, you know, that's fine because we need to get money. But the point is, I think we didn't handle that well. I don't think that it was explained to enough people. But as far as the influence of George Soros, I guarantee it. I know for a fact there was absolutely none. He gave money because he believes in NPR, as a lot of conservatives do. I wish there were more attention spent on conservatives spending money on NPR than the left. But again, a lot of things are perception. The Juan Williams thing was perception. The George Soros thing was perception. And in many ways, we didn't handle it right. But ultimately, right, I think both decisions were correct.
Yeah. And you also have to look at the whole of NPR. This is one incredible network. It really is, in the depth of what happens here.
Right. But I mean, I've seen some of the comments
by John
Boehner.
I know. I know what you're saying. It's a topic for another show. You're wonderful, Ken. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Thanks, Ken Rudin.